He'll get a quick and speedy recovery and be back with us. But in the meantime, let's turn to Acts chapter 17 tonight. The topic of the lesson tonight is for such a time as this. And we'll get to what this meaning, what the meaning of this phrase is in a little more detail later. We're going to focus back in the book of Esther to talk about some situations and things that happened in the life of Esther and Mordecai, her uncle, that will illustrate hopefully to us how God is working. And we need to be considering that in our own lives. And we need to be considering what the Lord's purpose is for us. And we need to be reminded here, as Paul is speaking to the ones here in Athens, that it is God that is in control and giving us all of these things. And let's read verses 24 through 28 here to begin tonight. Here he says, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands. Neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And is made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitations, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. So we do need to have in mind that God is our creator, that we have an obligation to serve our creator, that he gives us life. But of course, it doesn't stop there. As it says in verse 28, in him we live and we move and we have our being. But we'll see tonight that there's more to it than that also. We also need to remember what he tells us in Romans chapter 8, verses 28 and 29. He tells us here, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Do we really think about the implications of the promise that he gives us here in verse 28, that he is working all things together for good? You know, the implication here is that God is in complete and utter control of everything about us. He has to be in order to be able to work all things together for good to those that love him. And we can see an example of this in Matthew chapter 10 and verses 29 to 31. Here Jesus teaches, are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Not one sparrow falls to the ground without the Father. You know, that's the level of control that our Heavenly Father has on this earth. Now, we'll see, and even in the lesson tonight, as we walk through some of the chapters of Esther, we'll see there are those who did not do God's will, and God, of course, was displeased with those, but nevertheless, God uses them to accomplish his purpose. And so, regardless of whether we are going to serve God or not serve God, God will use all of us as vessels to accomplish his will. Now, of course, he wants all men to fulfill his will, but we know that that's not the way of most of the world. But we want to study tonight and see how we need to constantly be reminding ourselves that we are vessels in God's hands to be used by him. As he tells us in Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 6, he tells us here, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. We do need to acknowledge God in everything, in all that we do, in all of our ways. That means every single day that we're having in mind that not even a sparrow falls without him. And so we want to study tonight how God is working these things. We want to think about the different times of our own lives and think about the situations that we are in and how the Lord might be using those different situations for some purpose that he has. And hopefully we'll also see tonight that we need to understand that there's none of this that's happening by chance. The Lord is working all of these things. So as we go back to Esther chapter 1, we'll get some background here and see some things that are happening. Esther chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, it says here, "Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus," this is Ahasuerus which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, over 127 provinces, "that in those days when the king Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan the palace, in the third year of his reign, he made a feast unto all his princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, the nobles and princes of the provinces being before him." So according to historical knowledge, this would have been approximately 485 B.C. or sometime around then. That's the time that historians believe that Ahasuerus reigned. And of course, this is the third year in his reign. So approximately 500 years before Christ is the time setting for this. And we see here that King Ahasuerus is reigning over 127 provinces. And now he has called together this feast of all his princes of these provinces for them. And we're not going to read the rest of chapter 1 for time's sake here. But the king becomes very angry with the queen because she disobeyed his commandment to come in before those princes. And so the king talks to his wise men and asks what to do concerning that. And they persuade the king to remove Vashti from being the queen. And so that's the setting here then as we move into chapter 2 and we begin to read about Esther. Esther chapter 2, beginning in verse 5, it says, "Now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away." So we see there's a servant here named Mordecai, a servant in the palace. We see this Mordecai is a Jew, and he is part of the ones that had been carried away captive by Nebuchadnezzar. Now, we also, in this chapter, learn that he had raised Esther, his niece, as his own daughter. And in verse 10, one thing that we note here about Esther is it says that Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. So Mordecai, we'll see very clearly in the next chapter that Mordecai was not afraid to make it known when it was required that he was a Jew. But in the process of raising Esther, he wanted her to be careful not to disclose that, what her background was. Now, we're going to see that when the time comes that that's necessary, that that is the case. But for now, she had not yet shown who her people were. And so, as we mentioned, the king is now has now decided that he's going to have a new queen in place of Vashti. And Esther was one of the ones that was brought into the palace in this search for a new queen. And so in verse 17 of chapter 2, it says, "And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti." So Esther now, a Jew, has been made queen of this province along with King Ahasuerus. And again, it notes in verse 20, "Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai like as when she was brought up with him." And then note some things that happen in the next few verses. In verse 21, it says, "In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those who kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king." So remember, Mordecai was one of the servants of the king's, and here he heard of this conspiracy that these two men were making against the king. And when he heard that, he immediately reported that through Esther so that it would be made known. And they promptly found these two men and had them hung. Now, this is going to become a very important fact that comes up later. But again, we want to consider, are there really any coincidences that happen? Do we think about the degree of control that the Lord has and how he is working things? And we'll see this unfold more and more as we read further into the book of Esther here. Let's move on into chapter 3. We'll see here where the king promotes one of his other servants named Haman, and we'll read about that, beginning in verse 1. It says, "After these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set a seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence." Now, of course, that would have been something that would have been very displeasing to the Lord, for Mordecai, being a Jew, to bow down and reverence and worship this man. But, of course, that's what was being commanded here by Haman and Haman's servants. And so Mordecai refused to do so. So going back to the earlier comment that Mordecai had not told Esther to not make it known what their background was. Well, here we see a situation where Mordecai has to make a decision what to do in this case. And Mordecai is not afraid to stand out and to do to be noticed in order to do the right thing here. And of course, he also realizes that this could result in him being punished in some way. And we see that exactly unfolding here as we read further. In verse 3, it says, "Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, Why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought to scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai." So talk about an evil man here. So here he's very angry that Mordecai will not bow down to him. And because of that, he's not only angry with Mordecai, but now he's literally going to set out to destroy all of the Jews throughout all of the provinces because of what Mordecai has done here. In verses 8 and 9, it says, "Haman said unto King Ahasuerus, There is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have the charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries." So here Haman sets out literally to destroy all of the Jews in these provinces. It kind of reminds us of Hitler back a few decades ago, seeking to destroy all of the Jews. Well, here we have a Hitler, 500 BC, that was literally trying to go out to all of these provinces and destroy them, all because his pride had been hurt because one of these Jews refused to bow to him. In verse 11, unfortunately, we see the king giving him permission to do so. "The king said unto Haman, The silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee." So the king has now given permission to Haman to go out and to destroy these Jews. And so we pick up in chapter 4 now, in verse 7. It says, "And Mordecai told him," this is the king's chamberlain, "of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. Also he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther and to declare unto her and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and to make request before him for her people. So Mordecai sends a message now to Esther with the writing that gives the proof of what the king had signed into law, that all the Jews were now to be destroyed. And he's giving this to Esther to say, go to the king and make supplication to the king that he will not destroy our people. And so, picking up in verse 11 now, we see what Esther's initial response is to this request from Mordecai. Verse 11, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come into the king, unto the king, into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. So Esther's initial response was, well, I could be killed if I go before the king, because there is a law that unless he holds out that scepter to one, that they will be killed. So she's concerned about that. And so she sends that message back to Mordecai. And notice the response that he then gives in verse 13. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. So notice the faith that Mordecai had here. The faith that he knew that God would provide deliverance for his people one way or another. And in verse 14 he says, well, if it's not going to be Esther, the Lord will provide some other way. So did Mordecai believe in God's promises, and did he believe the Lord was in control? You know, we see that great faith of Mordecai here, and he's encouraging Esther to understand that the Lord would provide a way. But he's also saying, well, she's in a position here that she has an opportunity to be the one to help. And in verse 14, he reminds her and asks a question, who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? We need to consider that. You know, here Mordecai was making the point, well, the whole reason that you're now queen may have to do with the fact that the Lord was wanting to deliver his people, and he's providing a way directly to the king to make a request to the king so that we can that he can get rid of these ones that are trying to destroy the Jews. And so he's making the point to Esther here to consider why you are in the position that you're in. It may be for this very thing that he has made you queen. Now, he didn't know that, and that's why he said, use the word may there. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? He didn't know that, but of course, we need to ask those questions, and we need to understand that the Lord is working all things together for good. And we need to realize that all of these situations that are happening, just like the one that we're reading here about Esther and Mordecai and what's happening to the Jews here, Mordecai understood that these aren't just random events that are happening, that the Lord is working these things. And we need to be looking at our own daily lives and considering the circumstances that we're in, the events that are happening in our own lives, the situations that we find ourselves in. And we should realize, well, this isn't just some accident. If not even a sparrow falls to the ground without the Father, then certainly these things that are happening to me or you, These things aren't happening by some fluke chance. The Lord is working these things. And we need to have that understanding, and we need to acknowledge the Lord in all of our ways. We need to acknowledge that the situation I'm in right now today, the Lord is involved with this situation. And there's a reason for it. And we need to think about what that reason might be. And here Mordecai is helping Esther to understand the reason that she may be queen. And so Esther understands that, and she says, well, go and make requests and fast so that I'm not killed by the king here. So we need to consider ourselves, as the Lord describes in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 20 and 21, we need to consider ourselves as vessels, instruments that can be used by the Lord for different purposes. Here in verse 20 of 2 Timothy 2, it says, but in a great house are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. That word honor there is literally the word value. That if we purge ourselves from these evil things, that we will be a vessel that's valuable to the Lord. And we will be set apart, will be sanctified and meet or suitable for his use. We'll be prepared for all of these good works. And we can think about Esther in this case and the good work that she is getting ready to accomplish as a vessel in the Lord's hands. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1 is another passage that we should remember, another verse here. He says, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. We don't need to forget that, a time to every purpose under heaven. And of course, this was Esther's time that we're reading about now. It was time for her to do what was needed in order to accomplish the right thing in the Lord's eyes. And it was time for her to go to the king in this particular case. Now, as we continue back in the book of Esther in chapter 5, we'll see how things unfold. It's certainly not over by any means. In the early verses of chapter 5, we see that Esther goes before the king. She finds favor before the king. And so she invites the king and Haman to a banquet that she has prepared that is going to happen the next day. And so in verse 9, we'll read a few verses here. It says, then went Haman forth that day, joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. So here's Haman on his way home. The king and the queen have just invited him to a personal banquet the next day. What, you know, how honorable would that be? And of course, this is all going to Haman's head, as all of these things had been doing. And he's further lifted up because of this. But then, of course, on his way home, he yet again saw Mordecai in the gate, not bowing himself to him. In verse 10, it says, nevertheless, Haman refrained himself. And when he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then said Zeresh his wife and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the king, and the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. So here we see Haman bragging of all the honor that he thinks is being given to him by the king and the queen, and but also points out this problem of Mordecai still being around. And so his wife makes a suggestion of building this gallows to hang someone on that is 50 cubits high. So 75 feet tall, a gallows that they're going to put Mordecai up on and hang him because he's not bowing to Haman here. So that's the plan. Well, let's see what happens here and see if this is the Lord's plan. Esther chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, it says, "On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, 'What honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this?' Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, 'There's nothing done for him.'" Now we need to stop here for a second and ask some questions. Verse 1, it says, "That night the king could not sleep." Now, how many of us in here think that this is a coincidence that the king just happened to be having trouble that night as Haman and his wife are scheming to hang Mordecai? And meanwhile, here's the king in his palace. He's having trouble sleeping. And so he pulls out a little bit of reading, like folks like to do when they're having trouble sleeping. And he just happens to pick something that has something to say about Mordecai in it. So here on the one hand, we have Haman and his family scheming to kill Mordecai. And here we have the king now just happening to read about some things that Mordecai had done. And of course, this goes back to that event that we read earlier, where Mordecai saved the king's life by pointing out this conspiracy of these two men against the king. And so the king reads about that in the Chronicles, and he asks about, well, what good should we do for this Mordecai? So we'll pick up here in verse 4. It says, "And the king said, 'Who is in the court?' Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said unto him, 'Behold, Haman standeth in the court.' And the king said, 'Let him come in.' So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, 'What shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor?' Now Haman thought in his heart, 'To whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself?'" So again, we have to just kind of chuckle at how the Lord is working here and how Haman thinks he's in control and it's all going to work out great. That the king is getting ready to do great honor to him, and how he's shortly going to be able to hang Mordecai. And so the king, he comes in before the king, and the king asks this question, "What shall we do to the person that the king wants to honor?" And of course, who's Haman thinking of when he asked that question? You know, surely he must have had a big smile on his face when he answered that question, thinking, well, what, you know, here's the king asking me personally what he can do for me. In verse 7, it says, "Haman answered the king, 'For the man whom the king delights to honor, let the royal apparel be brought which the king uses to wear, and the horse that the king rides upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head. And let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man withal whom the king delights to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" So you know that Haman here was visualizing himself sitting on this horse, wearing the king's crown, being led by the king's servants, proclaiming what a good man that Haman was and one that had served the king and why the king was giving him such great honor. But suddenly things go very wrong for Haman in verse 10. "Then said the king to Haman, 'Make haste and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew.'" What do you think Haman thought when he heard that? You know, here he was thinking it was himself that the king was thinking of this time, and it was really Mordecai, his arch enemy, the one that he wanted to destroy. And so he says, "Do this to Mordecai the Jew that sits at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken." Then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor." And of course, that is Mordecai, not Haman. And Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. You know, it reminds us here of what that lesson that Nebuchadnezzar learned when Nebuchadnezzar says, those that walk in pride, God is able to abase. And he certainly abased Mordecai the first level here now. We're going to see it go a bit further in the next chapter. In chapter 7, it says, so the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day of the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed, even to half of the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he? And where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so? Now you can kind of see Haman getting smaller and smaller in his chair, can't you? As the queen is describing this terrible deed that someone has devised. And the king asks, well, where is this person? And who is this person? And of course, Haman knows that as all of this is being said before him. And so in verse 6, it says, and Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king, arising from the banquet of wine in his wrath, went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther the queen. For he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the palace, the place of the banquet of wine. And Haman was fallen upon the bed whereon Esther was. And then said the king, will he force the queen also before me in the house? And the word went out of the king's mouth. And as the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. So we see here then how the queen points out to the king that it's Haman that is determined to do this evil against the Jews, against her people. And we see then how the king hangs Haman on his very own gallows. Now, consider what the Lord teaches us in Proverbs 21 and verse 1. It says here, the Lord's heart, or the king's heart, is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turns it whithersoever he will. So remember, just a few days before this time, Haman had been before the king and had made a request to make a law to go and to wipe out the Jews from among all the provinces that Ahasuerus ruled. But what has happened now? Well, that has completely gone 180 degrees in the opposite direction to where the man that had devised all of that evil against God's people now has been hung on his own gallows. We need to understand and always remember that it is the Lord at work here. And, you know, if someone like Haman is fighting against God, you know, is he going to be successful? You know, we know he's not. And Mordecai understood that. Remember when Mordecai was telling Esther, well, if it's not you, it will be some other way that the Lord delivers us. And Mordecai had that faith to know that the Lord was going to deliver his people one way or another. And here we see this chain of events unfolding, and we see how the Lord was able to direct the king's heart to do the things that he wanted to accomplish. In chapter 8 of Esther, we see verse 17 here, a conclusion of all of this matter. In verse 17, it says, in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. So we see that because of this chain of events that transpired, that many of the ones of the land became Jews. So was God's purpose being accomplished here? You know, we see it being accomplished. Now consider what would we have been thinking if we had been watching this sequence of events. You know, it would have been hard to have kept up at times with some of the things that were happening. And we could probably say that about a lot of the things that are happening in our world today, can't we? We see a lot of quite unusual things happening about us. And we need to be reminded that it is the Lord at work in all of these things, and that somehow He is accomplishing His will. And that if we are doing our jobs as His people, then we can be used as a vessel by Him to accomplish His will. Romans chapter 8 and verse 31, just a few verses down from that promise that we read earlier, that God is working all things together for good. Here in verse 31, he says, "What shall we then say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us?" We need to have that faith that Mordecai and that Esther had, and be willing to be used as vessels to do good in the Lord's eyes. Psalm 75, let's read verses 6 and 7. Here he says, "For promotion comes neither from the east, nor the west, nor from the south, but God is the judge. He puts down one and sets up another." And we need to consider all of these things around us, that God is putting some down and He's setting up others, and He's working many, many things to accomplish His purpose. And we should be asking ourselves, am I considering myself as a vessel in all these things that God is working? You know, we all often read 2 Timothy chapter 3 as we are talking about, well, what is the purpose of the Scriptures that God has given us? And here in verses 16 and 17, it says, "All Scripture is given by inspiration of God, and it's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works." You know, as we consider the purpose that God's Word has, it is to thoroughly furnish, thoroughly equip us to all good works. We need to be considering the works that the Lord is seeking to accomplish in all of these events about us. And we need to be mindful of what His Word is teaching us, and to be diligent to follow and to do these things that we find in His Word, so that when that time does come, that we will be ready, we'll be equipped to do whatever good is necessary in that particular situation. We need to be constantly asking ourselves that question, you know, who knows whether we are come to this point for such a time as this? What is the purpose of this thing that's happening right now? Maybe this is the Lord's put me here for a certain reason in this situation. We need to be considering that, acknowledging that God's working these things, and be considering our own parts in these things and what we need to be doing. So I hope we will all be encouraged to think about the Lord's work, to think about His purpose, to think about what we each need to be doing to fulfill His purpose. We're getting ready to sing a song here in just a few minutes, as we call it, a song of imitation. We want to offer this as a time for those who have not yet put on Christ in baptism, who have not yet begun to walk in that new life, having that new mind that says, "I'm here to live for God and to do His will." We want you to consider that invitation that He does extend to all men everywhere across the face of this earth. And we want you to be encouraged to consider the Lord and His work and how He is working all of these things. And it may not be apparent to us at first glance, but we need to be mindful that He is working, and He is directing these kings and these authorities and these others. And He's working with us as individuals to accomplish His purpose. And Lord willing, we'll all be vessels that are honorable, that are valuable to the Lord to accomplish His will. So I hope we'll all be encouraged to do that. If you've not yet put on Christ in baptism, we would like for you to consider that and do so as we stand and sing tonight.